tell me a little bit about the history of that piece of property and how you got to be associated with it.
It's because I knew Ligon, and I met Ligon due to odds. Well, it's funny circumstance, really. And when I was in my freshman year walking from Syme dormitory going to Stevenson Music to go to work one morning and passing under the breezeway, this redheaded guy up above asked me if I had a dime or a quarter or whatever for a cup of coffee. He thought I was probably wealthy. I was carrying a nice suitcase going to work to work my way through school. He was Ligon, and I said, sure. So I gave him some money for a cup of coffee. That's how we met. He was living in what was called Flat Five, which was at 112 Cox Avenue, which was passed on from one set of design students to another. And if you got it, you had beds, furniture, linen, silverware, pots and pans. You were ready to go. So he asked me later if I wanted to live at Flat Five, and I said, of course. And David Tyson, another design student that I moved in. And later, within a year or two, I kept seeing Ligon, and one spring, he asked me if I would like to work on an experimental house he was designing, and I said yes. So late in the spring, he had me start doing some drafting for him, working out some details for the house. And my roommate, Dave Tyson, who is deceased now, Dave, I think, went out to Arizona and practiced. He was from Black Mountain, where I had hoped to go to college, but it shut down before I could get there. Then when the summer began, Ligon hired Elmer Mains as a general contractor for the job. Now, what he did was do the bookkeeping. He paid us, et cetera, et cetera. He did not direct the construction or anything. He did put, I think there was one man on the job. There may have been two at times. David Tyson and I were the labor force that stuck with it all the way. And so when school was out and, you know, ground was broken and out we went. And I think the first things I did, Mason came in and laid the block walls for the retaining wall of the basement area. You know, it's on the hillside there, sloping down to the creek. Was to get the early plumbing lines in. So my first job was installing oakum in cast iron joints and pouring lead into joints, which was some experience. Then we started framing the, you know, the wood structure part of the house. And the deck out there, which also serves as a carport, became our work platform as soon as we could get it up. We had a Sears radial arm saw set up in the middle of the length of the carport deck, and we had tables extending each side of the saw, and we fabricated box beams. They are fabricated by placing 2-inch dimension lumber flat, in other words, in its 1.5-inch width, with I believe it was 3/8 or 1/4-inch plywood each side with stiffeners at 16 inches zone or 24 inches on center, depending on the bearing points that other members would sit on it. And then outside, the plywood top and bottom were two tubifores. I believe the top and bottom cords in the center were 2x6s. This was all glued together with Resource and All glue. We had from the aircraft industry staplers and a big compressor. And the stapling technology then was not in construction. It was used in airplanes, and that's where Ligon, and I think it was Joe Hoskins, who was a classmate, had sort of developed this technique. And so we rigged with hinges stop blocks on the long cutoff tables by the saw, so you would didn't have to measure every piece. There were so many pieces repetitiously in length that we had stop blocks, and we'd flip the blocks down and then cut, and whatever scrap, you know, we would make stiffeners and et cetera, et cetera. So it was a real production facility in that sense. And we fabricated the box beams and the columns, and after the box beams, I can't remember whether we set the box beams first or the big trusses. Trusses were made in the same manner. My recollection is that the beam spans were either 12 or 16 feet, and the trusses were, I believe, 32 feet. And the trusses were not open web trusses, but rather constructed like the box beams. In other words, the web of the truss was the plywood, and of course there was flat, you know, there were flat pieces of lumber inside. I can't remember if they were arranged in a truss manner, triangulated or not, but their construction was very similar to the box beam. They were big and heavy to get up. We didn't have a crane. I don't remember how we got them up there, but we did. Anyway, the house was generally, there were many members cut the same length, and therefore the stop blocks on the saw tables, and then placed. The finishes inside were, it was sort of like pickling, we call it, where we would first paint the plywood sheets. That was the wall finish. And then I remember being out there at night in the fall, spraying lacquer, clear lacquer, over those sheets in the basement area before they were moved upstairs, put in place. I don't remember the roof. I believe it was just a composition shingle. And I believe there was a skylight in the middle of the living area. The masonry piers, which supported the columns, were concrete brick, not clay brick, but rather concrete brick. And I do remember building the form for the fireplace mantle, which was structural, it cantilevered. As I recall, took 2x2s, cut those on the diagonal so that they were triangular shaped. And then if you imagine, these were placed next to each other in a pattern, which made a faceted front on that mantle. Ligon and Susan, his wife, and I introduced Susan and Ligon to each other. She was from Wilmington. Her maiden name was Harden. They moved into the house eventually and then later sold it. Let's Let's see, that's about the extent of what I think I can remember.